from KQED. Hey there, happy new year, everyone. From KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown, 2019 style. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Happy new year.
Happy new year.
And, you know, in just a few days, we're going to have a new governor here in California. Call it a brownout. Transition to the Gavinor, maybe?
I think Gavin, yeah, would like to avoid all brown references. But that change is meaning a lot of turnover in Sacramento, where Jerry Brown's administration is packing up and Governor-elect Newsom's staff is getting ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, so we're going to have someone on the show today who knows firsthand what that kind of transition is like. Aaron McClure was the press secretary for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for 5 years of his term.
He also worked for an Ohio governor, for Mitt Romney, and for Uber.
Yeah.
Which will be fun to talk about, too.
Absolutely.
We think, if he's down. We'll see.
Using Uber everywhere when I was in Mexico.
Oh, really?
Just FYI.
Just FYI. Okay.
Yeah, that's all.
He's pro-Uber. We'll get into that. But first, Scott, let's talk about the big news of the day.
The dawn of a new day.
San Francisco's Nancy Pelosi is officially the House Speaker. We've been expecting it for a while.
Yeah, and you know, the image of one Californian handing Kevin McCarthy handing the gavel to another was interesting to me. I mean, of course, McCarthy aspired to be Speaker, grasped to the ring, and didn't quite get there. In fact, had a terrible election with so many of his members getting defeated. But it was an all California affair, and then they brought the kids up.
Yes. And I mean, speaking of those defeats, I mean, all seven members of the new Democratic California caucus did vote for Pelosi, even after some waffling by some of them.
Right. Cisneros in particular.
Yeah. But Pelosi sort of did a redux of 2007, surrounded by children.
Were there any Republican kids? I mean, kids of Republicans up there? I don't think they've registered yet.
Sent them up there.
Really?
It seems, I mean, the whole thing is very partisan, right? Like, you can tell. I mean, I noticed even when she had a line about it being 100 years since women had the vote and how many, the record number, 127 women in both houses of Congress, the Republicans didn't stand up for that. They clapped. But
yeah.
When I was looking, you know. Still don't stand up. It's very
prescribed. I think that's, you know, at Pelosi, it is an extraordinary story. You know, like her, hate her, she is a survivor. She's, you know, think about this, 78 years old. And she was introduced by Hakeem Jeffries, who I think said, you know, she's just getting started, which probably gave, you know, heart palpitations to some of the freshman members. But no, really, if you think about
like when she was born, what the world was like, where she lived, how she lived her life.
Well, just having the stamina and the wherewithal. I mean, a lot of people at that age are traveling the world, you know, hanging out with the grandkids and, you know, God bless them, you know,
yeah.
But she's really so committed, and as the Republicans are committed to making sure she's not successful.
That's right. I mean, so I think we'll be watching, obviously, all of us in the U.S. to see what happens, but it's interesting, I think, as a San Franciscan to kind of see her rise again. First speaker in six decades, I think, who retook the gavel after losing it.
And I don't think anyone's had such a, you know, long period in between being speaker. So.
So that's happening. And then this other thing you might have heard about, 2020 election.
Yeah, boy, there was kind of an odd event today. You know, of course, there's all these Californians thinking about running. No one's officially in yet. Kamala Harris, Eric Swalwell, Tom Steyer,
Eric Garcetti.
And so in Washington today, Dianne Feinstein was cornered in an elevator and was asked, you know, about 2020. And she said, yeah, I like Joe Biden. He's got a lot of experience. I've worked with him. I really respect him. And then the door's closed, and Twitter exploded. It was odd because she just like handed the endorsement without. He's not running yet, and B, she didn't get anything for it. It was an odd moment.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to wonder what the next meeting between her and Kamala Harris is going to be like, given.
The doors were closed. Oh, but I like Kamala. You know, like that. But yeah, and no heads up, of course. But, you know, I guess on some level, hey, she likes Biden. So she's entitled to say that. She's not going to have another election that she has to face. And I'm sure that she's more comfortable in a lot of ways with Joe Biden than, you know. She is with Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and I think it's a very sort of Dianne Feinstein thing. She's like, what? I like him. We've had a long relationship.
Yeah.
I like what he did in the Senate.
Trump could still be a good president. Same thing.
You know, just for fun, what's your predictions? Like, when do you think we might hear from a Harris or Swalwell about these intentions? They all sort of indicated they were going to chew it over the holidays.
I mean, certainly January, I would say within the next couple of weeks, maybe. You know, I think they're gonna all start dribbling out, and once they start, then they're all. But people like Biden can kind of hang back, you know, because he can raise money quickly and has name ID already. Swalwell and Garcetti, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, they may not get in.
Right.
You know, they may be running for vice president.
I mean, they're certainly getting the attention. I mean, every time you turn on the TV, there's Swalwell or Schiff, Adam Schiff.
He must have a desk at MSNBC.
Totally.
There was one moment this afternoon that Schiff was on CNN and Swalwell was on MSNBC. You know, they're in demand now.
But not a lot from Steyer lately.
No.
We'll see.
All right. Well, he needs something other than we got to impeach the president.
Well, we will, of course, be watching all this closely since not only are there four Californians potentially running.
That we know of.
We are going to be part of Super Tuesday. So
right.
It'll be.
Wow. And it's coming so fast. It's like.
A year away.
Yeah.
A little more.
But the organizing and all that stuff is really going to get going really quickly.
All right. Well, let's turn our attention back to California. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will be with Aaron McClear. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos, and we're excited to welcome to the breakdown Aaron McClear. Aaron, he is a longtime GOP communication strategist, although perhaps not still. We will talk with him about that. He made the leap to the private sector a few years ago after working for Arnold Schwarzenegger and now working for the private sector and some consulting gigs with Edelman. And welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. So, you know, not a lot of people probably know who you are. You work behind the scenes. And, you know, so we have a tendency to ask people, where they came from. You know, I know you grew up in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you've ever even followed him on Twitter at all, you know where
he's
from.
He's an Ohioan.
That's right.
You worked for the former governor there, mm-hmm. and you worked for others. Yeah, to tell us about growing up in Ohio.
Sure. I grew up in a rural community, Dark County, Ohio. It went 70% for Trump. So it's a very, very Republican area of the state. And then I went to The Ohio State University. I graduated in journalism and political science there.
Journalism, so you've always liked us.
I have. I was actually a sports writer for The Ohio State Lantern, so I have a journalism background, almost.
Cool.
Worked for Governor Taft there for a few years. Did the Bush campaign in 2004 as the communications director. Then I went to Washington to work at the RNC, and then came out here in 2007 to work for Governor Schwarzenegger. Did that for 4 years, and then was a political consultant for a few years. Went to Uber. Now I'm back to consulting.
So let's go back to growing up in Ohio and that 70% Republican or Trump supporting district. Does that mean you come from a family of pretty strong Republicans?
You know, I think they were probably Democrats until I got involved and they became Republicans to support me. But it was, it's interesting to be here in the heart of the resistance and being from a place.
You live in SF, actually.
I live in Speaker Pelosi's district.
We had Sean Walsh on quite a while ago, and he was talking. He's in Barbara Lee's district.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, my friends that I worked with at the RNC. Like, how did you go from the RNC to living in Nancy Pelosi's district? Like, how far you've come? But the folks in back home in Dark County, it's interesting to hear them talk about why they support Trump, and it's not for the reasons you kind of hear here. They're not all stupid. They're not racist. They're not misogynist. They're not bad people. They really believe this is a person who's delivering on what he said he'd do, which is rare for a politician. I think that the conservative justices are a big deal there. I think that the tax cuts. I think that the regulatory reforms. These are real things that affect them. And that's why they support this guy. And it's interesting to hear here why people think they do. It's much different there.
Well, let's lay out from the start, though. You are not a Republican anymore, or
I'm
at least
not.
Registered.
No, I left the party the day after it nominated President Trump.
Oh, before even he was elected, when
that's
he was
right.
nominated.
Yeah, the day we nominated President Trump, I decided that was, for me, it was the last straw.
So are you no party preference now?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Can I just ask, who did you vote for in the congressional race here?
I wrote in David Crane, who is a...
Oh, really?
if you guys know.
Pensions.
Yeah, pensions.
Yes, exactly.
He is charter schools.
Yes, I'm an Arnold Republican and David Crane, no party preference. So
has that made... I mean, you do live in San Francisco, though. Mm-hmm. You are not a registered GOP anymore. Has that made the conversations you're having having with some of your family or friends back home more interesting? I mean, were they surprised that you left the party?
I don't think so, because I was always very much a moderate Republican. You know, you covered Arnold. I mean, yeah. You know, the idea of working with, you know, Democrats, of finding the best solutions no matter where they came from, that appealed to me. When I worked for President Bush, I was very attracted to the fact that when he was governor, you know, he was working across the aisle with Democrats on education, right? He worked with Ted Kennedy on education. That has always been very attractive to me. And so when my party, I think, just kind of kept drifting further to the right and further to the conspiracy theorist wing of the party and didn't really want to solve problems or work with others, it just was unattractive to me. So I left.
You know, we often ask consultants, you know, are there candidates they've worked for that they didn't like really particularly, or were there issues that they had to advocate for? And, you know, you mentioned the 2004 presidential election. You were in Ohio, and a big issue there was gay marriage. Mm-hmm. And there was something on the ballot. It was basically intended to bring out conservative voters. It was an anti-gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Kerry lost that state by about 60,000 votes, I think.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah. So, you know, you also had you formed a group of conservatives for marriage choice, marriage
That's
equality.
Right.
So, like, talk about that transition and being there, you know, when that was such a big issue.
It's something I'm not proud to have been a part of, to be honest with you. I think it's not a secret that in 2004 there were a lot of marriage equality issues on ballots mm-hmm. in swing states, and that turned out a lot of evangelicals. It's something that I'm very passionate about, marriage equality. When I was at the RNC, I actually walked out one day when we were to go on the radio as a spokesperson and talk about that issue. It's the only issue that I've ever not been able to advocate for in my mm-hmm. job. So it's something that happened a long time ago, but it's I'm glad that as a country, you know, we've been coming around on that. Unfortunately, like so many other issues, my former party isn't quite there yet.
Well, and you've joined the ranks of a non-party that is bigger than the GOP in California now. No party preference. Welcome.
Thank you.
We like having
here.
You. I'm just curious, though.
Party of journalists.
Yeah, party of journalists and consultants. But, you know, Schwarzenegger, as we sort of alluded to, was not a typical Republican. I mean, he's not a typical anything.
Right.
But, you know, he was ringing the bell on climate change before even a lot of Democrats were at that table.
Yeah.
He was out there, you know, on marriage equality. Some of these other socialist issues.
Not initially. That's
true. Yeah. That's true. But he did get there, I think, prior mm-hmm. to a lot of folks. I mean, and he really warned, I think, presciently about what the GOP was going to undergo in California,
yeah.
which was this, you know, really big plummet in registration. And now we saw them really get what was the Obama line about after they lost the shellacking of 2018?
Yeah, where he said, I think we're dying at the box office.
That's right.
The line he is.
11 yeah. years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you see when you look at the California GOP? Like, what should they be doing?
Well, they should have listened to Arnold 11 years ago. I mean, what Arnold was saying is, you know, at the time was that we're dying at the box office. We're losing numbers, right? And you've seen that precipitous drop since that point in registration. We lost, seven congressional seats this year? We're down to 7 of 50
Cut them in
some.
Half.
Yeah, it's amazing. We have super majorities for Democrats in the legislature. It has got precipitous, like much, much worse since he said that. I do, you know, communications, marketing, branding, you know, reputation management for companies right now. If I were talking to a company and they were losing market share because they were only advertising and only selling their product to older, rural, white men, you know, I'd say, well, what are you doing? Let's find a way that we can market your product to other people. Unfortunately, even now, the Republican Party nationally and certainly in the state, they just don't want to sell what they have. They'll have to change their stripes, but sell what they have
that,
to
though.
Others.
Like, how is that? Because I think that some of, you know, especially on the social issues, but it is a challenge when you have new generations who maybe don't share the same, I don't know, values is sort of a buzzword around that.
Well, I think, look, as a 41, young former Republican, I think the social issues are a barrier for a lot of people my age and younger. They say, well, hold on a second. Like, I'm with you on fiscal conservatism. I'm with you on reducing the debt. I'm with you on the military. But hold on a second. You don't think gay people should get married? That's insane. You know, so these are issues I think are threshold issues that we need to get past. But even beyond that, we need to be talking about my former party needs to be talking much more about why, you know, personal responsibility and freedom is the way in which we're going to lift people out of poverty and get them a good education. And it's just not happening.
What would it take for you to rejoin the party?
Oh, I would love to. I hope I can someday. I think as long as it's being led by President Trump and these conspiracy theorists on the right, it's just not a place where I feel comfortable being.
It's weird to me that, you know, that a party can so quickly, you mm-hmm. know, the party of George Bush,
yeah.
George W. Bush and H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, you know, can suddenly become a party that seems so much more you know, disinterested in facts and science and all that stuff. Like, how do you think about that transition?
Well, let me just say this. To be fair, I think that the far left of the Democratic Party is no better. I think they're also disinterested in the facts and disinterested in bipartisanship and working with each other. I don't know how far it fell. You all had Tim Miller on recently, and Tim is actually doing a lot of work and looking into kind of how we got here. I think a lot of it had to do with the, you know, with the Tea Party movement. If you look at the, you know, what happened with Sarah Palin and what that sort of ignited in people, and it kept going. But for whatever reason, the, you know, sort of the adults in the room are no longer controlling things. And it's these conspiracy theorists, these Steve Bannon types that are running things now.
But you mentioned, and I want to move on in a second, but you mentioned immigration. You mentioned that, you know, this issue of I think people in maybe coastal cities thinking that Trump supporters are racist, but that really has been a huge issue. And I do wonder how you know, when you're talking about bridging some of those gaps, how you do that if you have a party that has really embraced some of these more hardline immigration positions.
Well, I think it takes things like what Governor Romney did the other day with his op-ed in the Washington Post, which is to really call out the president for some of this moral behavior. You know, forget the issues for a second, but just the way in which he's behaving. I think that's important. I think it takes the Jeb Bushes of the world. I think it takes the leaders that we've had that can stand up and say, hey, look, this is wrong. You know, I've been really disappointed, not just in Trump and the far right, but the folks who I would typically support, that they're not out there saying, hey, hold on a second. This is not the way to go.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio, and our guest today is former spokesman for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Aaron McClear. I'm here with Marisa Lagos as well. Just another question about Arnold. You know, he came into office, you know, with the promising to blow up the boxes and all that
stuff. Smashing the car.
I know you weren't there for the very initial part. You came for the second term. But, you know, what was he like to work for?
Oh, he was great. I mean, I'm blindly loyal to Governor Schwarzenegger. I met my wife there. He came to our wedding. He's been so incredibly generous to us. And I think the way in which he led, which was, look, when I interviewed with him, I probably talked to a half dozen Democrats before I went in the smoking tent and talked to him. You know, and that was actually really appealing to me. And that showed me that this is someone who wants to work with everybody.
You mean people who were working for him?
Exactly.
Including his chief of staff.
I had an interview with Susan Kennedy and Daniel Zingali and Bonnie Reese and all these Democrats before I even talked to him, which I thought was really great. But look, working for him was an amazing experience. I think that he had such outsized big ideas, and he was really accomplishing a lot. I think he got a lot done. The last 3 years dealing with the Great Recession was really difficult. We couldn't get these things done that we wanted to do. We had to deal with this budget deficit for 3 years. But he's an amazing man. He's still doing amazing things on political reform, on the environment.
And he's taken on Trump.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just wish there were more people in the Republican Party who would stand up and you know, speak truth to power.
But he did oversee, you know, a really awful time on the state budget when you guys left office. He left, you know, there was $27 billion deficit. Gavin Newsom's coming in with a surplus. I guess as someone who's been like in that building, in the horseshoe working, what would your advice be to this new governor?
Here's what I'm worried about is that for all that Governor Brown accomplished, and I think he did a lot of wonderful things. We didn't do anything about the unfunded liabilities and the pension reform. He did some marginal things. It didn't really affect it. And we did nothing about the tax system. Those are the two big elephants in the room that are going to come back to bite us when we don't have 6 years of a good market, right?
Do you think that, because Newsom has said that everything's on the table with regard to tax reform, including Prop 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you see some modification to Prop 13 that might include, say, a split roll for commercial property that, you know, would be part of the grand bargain? Say?
I think everything needs to be on the table. And I think that the electorate is different than it was in 1978 when that proposition passed. But I don't think there should be any sacred cows. It's a real problem. I mean, we are going to go through another recession, you know, any day now, right? And when we do, you know, that 20-some billion surplus, that's going to go away, and whatever's in the rainy day fund is going to go away.
Like really
that's pocket change compared to the problem we're going to have.
And I mean, the other difference between both when you were up there and even some of Brown's terms is that you have this like super duper majority of Democrats,
right?
We've talked on this show a lot about the potential for, you know, that being a double-edged sword for Newsom. I'm curious, though, like, what do you see as the opening, since you're in the private sector now, for business with this? Because it seems to me like moderate Democrats have kind of become the Republicans of 10 years ago.
Right.
Like, do you think that there's, I don't know, is it a better or worse place to be as somebody in the business sector than it was a couple of years ago.
I think it's I think they've been smart. I think the chamber has been smart in changing their strategy instead of blindly endorsing and supporting Republicans a few years ago. They decided, hey, hold on a second, Republicans are completely irrelevant in California now. We need to get with the moderate Democrats. We need to back the moderate Democrats or the business friendly folks who are going to, you know, support some of their issues. I think they've been smart in doing that.
I want to ask you about the private sector. You did work for Uber for a while, a company that really needed a change in corporate image. You know, what was that like working there? And did you try, you know, to change the image? It had, you know, the CEO ultimately left, very bro kind of atmosphere, horrible environment for women, minorities. You know, was that, did you see all that? Or, you know, was that overblown or did you see it?
No, we were there. I was in the middle of all of it. And I was part of the team that was dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. And first of all, it was fascinating for someone like me, you know, who comes from politics. It had that pace and intensity and importance and front page news every day, right? And so it was really, really fascinating.
What was fascinating?
Well, I think it was fascinating to deal with something that was so quick moving and that we couldn't prepare for, right? That's the stuff that you do in politics that gets your adrenaline going.
Like, you know? Campaigns.
Exactly. It's like a campaign. The only difference is on a campaign, you got that calendar on the wall where you go 32 days, 31 days, right? At Uber, there was no calendar on the wall. It was like that pace. We had no idea when it was going to end. But I worked with some really smart, really great people there. There continues to be some really smart, really great people there.
What about the culture?
I think the culture is changing. I think that's tough to shift the culture from what it was to what I think it's going to become. I think Dara is excellent. He's the new CEO, and he's brought in a great leadership team there.
What do you see? Like, is it you mentioned sort of the fast-paced culture, which is unusual because a lot of people go from politics to the private sector, and I think are like, why do we have to have 55 meetings about anything? Can someone make a decision?
Yeah.
But then there's also similarities in that the original CEO of Uber really did set the tone, Travis Kalanick, and, you know, I guess, like, what are the differences in a corporation versus a candidate, and are there similarities?
I think it's very similar, at least at Uber. Now, I work with some other corporations now that are not as fast-paced and not as hyper-growth as it was at Uber, but certainly at Uber, it did feel like the company was the candidate. Mm-hmm. And you heard David Plouffe, who I used to work with, when he came into Uber, that's what he said. He said he's going to treat the, you know, Uber as the candidate. And we really ran the policy and comm shop, you know, similar to what a political campaign is. I work with other companies right now that are a little bit slower paced, that have a little bit more bureaucracy. You know, frankly, from my background, I much prefer those kind of startup-y cultures. I work with a venture capital firm here in town that where I get to have some exposure to that. It's a lot more fun.
Well, I know you worked with Ron Conway, who is sort of an angel investor, very controversial here in San Francisco. He's, I think, a former Republican, but was a big backer of Ed Lee. And you formed
only controversial because he entered into the political sphere,
that's
right?
Right.
No one was controversial about
before
Ron.
Before that. Talk about that. You know, working for Ed Lee, why you felt, that was something that Conway wanted.
Yeah.
And Lee was obviously very pro-tech, which some think now maybe wasn't the best thing for the city.
Well, I totally disagree with that. But that was a fun campaign. I met Ron in 2011 and ran the independent expenditure campaign in support of Mayor Lee. It was the one with the MC Hammer video.
Right, that's what I was going to bring up. You guys got a lot of attention for that.
Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. I've worked with Ron since then. But no, I think Ed Lee did a lot of great things for the city. I think that Mayor Breed now is going to continue some of that work, and I know she's very focused on a lot of the issues that we have here.
Do you think the tech is sort of unfairly maligned in terms of changing the culture of the city, driving up, really having a big negative impact on affordability and so on?
I think that it's a factor that needs to be looked at, but I think that a lot of other factors are, you know, you talk about Sacramento being, you know, a one-horse town. I mean, you know, there's just different shades of liberalism here in San Francisco. So I don't think there's a lot of opposing views in City Hall that could come up with some interesting solutions. I'm hoping Mayor Breed, I believe in her quite a bit, that she's going to come up with some of these solutions. But I think it's overly simplistic to say that because we have this influx of tech companies here, which are, by the way, providing a ton of jobs, and you talk to, I'm sure, you know, restaurants and other small businesses around town, they're very happy to have the business. I think it's very narrowly focused to say it's because of tech that we have these issues.
So you just said nice things about former Mayor Ed Lee, who passed away about a year ago, and current Mayor Lyndon Breed. That leads me to believe you have voted for Democrats.
Oh, I've voted for a lot of Democrats. I think I wrote a check to Mayor Breed. I wrote a check to whoever the current United States Senator is from Alabama who ran against Roy Moore. I don't even know his name.
Doug Jones.
Sure, yes. I wrote a check to him. I was quick to do that when our party decided to support a pedophile. So I've supported lots of Democrats through the years, mostly Republicans, but, you know.
It's a little out of left field, but, you know, you mentioned mentioned Alabama. What do you make of the kerfuffle around the managing partner of the Giants who got in trouble for sending donations to campaigns that ended up using making racist ads and so on?
Oh God! So I didn't see that, but the managing director of the Giants,
yeah, Johnson, I think his name
okay.
is. Okay, if you don't know about it, we'll skip.
I think that you need to be careful, when I advise individuals and corporations on how they're going to play politically, you got to vet this stuff very, very, very thoroughly, because particularly now, there's a lot of snake oil with a lot of what these political consultants are selling, and we've seen recently a lot of them get in some trouble. So you have to be very careful to vet where your money is being spent.
So let's talk about next. So Monday, Newsom gets sworn in.
Yep.
We will actually have a special broadcast. Scott will be up there along with
11
our own
one.
Katie Orr.
Yep.
But you were there as Schwarzenegger exited the stage. What's it like handing off the reins to a new administration? And is it's probably a little different this time because it's a Democrat to a Democrat, but it must always be a little strange.
Well, it was, look, for, I mean, personally, it was bittersweet. I mean, we turned the lights out in that place. We didn't want to go. We loved and adored and still do Governor Schwarzenegger. And we really were proud of the work we did. So it was a sad moment. We spent a lot of time with Governor Brown and his wife and his team as they were coming in. Frankly, they had been there before. You know, he had spent his lifetime in public service, so they didn't need us. I think they were very gracious about saying thanks, but no thanks. We're, just let us move in here. Let us know when the Conan sword is gone so we can move in. And I think this is, you have a lot of people like Daniel Gonzalez and like Ana Mata Santos, who served under Governor Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. who served, at least Ana with his administration. I think there's a lot of holdovers. We didn't do that. Governor Brown didn't keep, if anybody, from Governor Schwarzenegger's office. So I think you have an easier transition, not just Dem to Dem, because we had, we were friends with Governor Brown. But I think more of it has, you have the personnel who's going to stick around. I think it's going to be an easy transition.
Did you happen to witness any of the meetings, if there were any, between Governor Schwarzenegger and Jerry Brown?
Yeah, a little bit. We had
what was
in,
the dynamic like?
Well, it wasn't the first time they met. He was the attorney general,
sure.
So they had, and he, I think he
oh,
was
right.
he had been around, and they had worked together. They had a good working relationship.
It's hard to think of two more different people.
But they're both very intellectual. They're both very, and they both care very much about California. They both care very much about the environment, and I think that they both understand that the fiscal issues that we're facing with the tax reform and the pensions I just mentioned. So I actually think that they have a lot more in common than they do apart.
All right, 30 seconds left. Have you ever driven Uber?
I did. Yeah, I did about 40 trips when I was working there, just to get a better understanding of it. And I ended with 5 stars.
Yeah?
Yeah, 5 stars.
No bad experiences?
Worst story.
I didn't have,
nobody threw up in your car.
Someone got in my car. Someone got my car who actually knew from Sacramento, a political consultant from Sacramento.
Yeah, and gave you 3 stars.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it was a really great experience. It was fun.
So back up in case politics.
Never know. It's a great gig. It's a great gig. You're not going to hear me say anything bad about that company. Yeah, the McClear family are big supporters of Uber.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
You going to the inauguration on Monday or no?
I will not. I will not be in town on Monday, sadly. I'll be at the national championship game down in Santa Clara.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm going to miss it.
Hashtag priorities.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, Aaron McClear,
thanks a lot.
Thank you again. That will do it for this edition of Political Breakdown, a production of KQED Public Radio. As we mentioned, we'll be back Monday with live coverage of Gavin Newsom's inauguration starting at 11 a.m.
And later in the week, we'll continue the party during our regular breakdown. Thursday, we'll sit down next week with Senator Holly Mitchell, who chairs the Budget Committee.
We'll get her perspective just hours after Newsom unveils his first spending plan. That is like Christmas for political junkies. For this week, our producer is Guy Marzorati, and our engineer is Seal Muller.
Ethan Lindsay is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our chief content officer. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me at Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. You can find me at M Lagos. That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED.
See you next time.